Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
We didn't think 2 years after you won this, was it 2 years ago? It feels like it's been 18 years since you won this title. Vasek Pospisil joining us in Charlottesville, Virginia. A lot's changed over the last couple of years, and yet here we are. So where are you at mentally right now in terms of how you're finishing this season and just frankly, what has been a chaotic last year?
Well, first of all, it's great to be on the show. Thanks for having me, guys. I've heard a couple of your podcasts, and you guys do an amazing job.
Thank you.
So I'm happy to be here. To answer your question, it's been an interesting year. I'll put it that way. I don't think I've ever had more things happen in a 12-month period in my life than this last year, and the outcome of that, you know, professionally, at least on the tennis court, has been that I, you know, maybe haven't had the most consistent results, and I feel like I'm striking the ball clean when I, you know, get the right training in, but obviously this year has been kind of, not the best for me on the court, but at the same time I feel like I can turn it around pretty quickly, so I feel like next year I'll come back strong.
For someone I do understand, and Mike makes fun of me that I have about a billion ventures going on at one time, and I can never, find that, you know, stability. But you know, for you right now, you know, with the tennis side of things, are you finding the time, or are you just exhausted?
No, I'm finding the time for sure. I mean, I've had a lot of things happen this year that have negatively impacted my performance on court and my ability to, you know, put maximum effort into training and tennis, but it's still my priority. I mean, that's the thing. It's like I still, you know, make sure that I do everything that I am supposed to do in tennis first, and then whatever's left of the day, I just, you know, spend on the other projects. So I don't watch TV. I don't have time for. I used to play guitar. I used to do all this stuff. I have like no time. I go to bed at like, you know, 11, 12 midnight almost every day, and maybe I'll spend like 30 minutes watching a couple of YouTube videos. Other than that, it's just emails and it's just madness. So it's draining me out. I pretty much work 7 days a week, and yeah, I mean, I need to find a little bit more time for myself.
And taking a breath every once in a while. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, obviously, you know, you're still an incredible player. Whether the ranking is where you want it to be is irrelevant, but you know, something I found kind of getting into behind the racket or anything else I was doing, the one loss you have when you start to lose a few in a row, everybody's like, well, you shut up and play tennis. You know, this is not, you're obviously wasting time doing this other stuff. Are you feeling that? Is that pressure kind of mounting a little bit after all this time, or are you taking it?
It is. Yeah. For sure. It's mounting. And, you know, but here's the thing. I mean, last year, 2020, and even, you know, the end of 2019, I was playing, I mean, for, you know, my standards and kind of my career, I was playing incredible tennis. I mean, I had, you know, 4 top 10 wins. I was, I finished the race 28 and my ranking was 60 because because of the new COVID rankings I had. So I was playing really good tennis and I was incredibly busy. I was doing the same stuff I'm doing today. I mean, you know, with all these other ventures and projects. And the thing is they always, I feel like if you're busy, as long as it's bringing you positive energy and it's not like draining, I feel like there have been a couple changes where a few of the ventures or a few things that I was doing off the court became a little bit more draining and stressful. And then that obviously can impact the tennis court. But I think the biggest thing this year for me was just the stability within the team. You know, just with COVID, you know, my coach couldn't travel. And I was with, you know, my ex-girlfriend, traveling alone with her, which isn't great because, you know, I mean, no, she's a sweetheart, but you know, didn't really understand what it took. So I felt like I was being pulled away a little bit from things I needed to do on the court. And that along with, you know, the stresses of COVID and the PTPA and everything that was kind of going on definitely, didn't give me the best platform to do well on the court. But I will say that, you know, I can handle off-court stress really well, and I think the main thing really was just the stability within the team. You know, my physios not being able to travel with me anymore because of COVID restrictions and them being Canadian, and then not having my coach, I mean, most of the year. And then also not playing that many events. So I wasn't really match tough. I mean, I played only, you know, I took 3 months off at some point and just played very few events as well.
You are back here in Charlottesville. Being at a challenger can often be difficult, especially as you get a little bit older in your career. It's tougher to come back down to these events. How are you refocusing, and especially as you've brought Vincent Miel into the team now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely you know, bringing things back in a little bit. I mean, I'm here with my physio with a coach. I'm currently looking for a full time coach, so I'm here part time with Vincent, and I'm motivated. I mean, I got really good, you know, last 10 days I trained really hard. I had to take 10 days off after Indian Wells with a back injury, but yeah, I mean, I'm always motivated. I'm just an ambitious guy, right? So if I'm on the court, whatever I'm doing it 100%. So you know, coming back to challengers, you know, sometimes you got to do it. You know, let's say for me, because I've been mainly at ATP events over the years, but you know, there's still, I mean, winning, you know, doing well at challengers is very tough. There's a lot of great players here, but it's also a good event to kind of pick up a little bit of steam and try to get some match wins and get rolling a little bit.
Now we want to kind of transition to, you know, the topic we brought you here for, which is mushrooms, obviously.
Great. Yeah. I can talk about that all day.
No, you can. We want to talk about PTPA. We want to focus a little bit more on specifically challenger-ish players, you know, and at the lower levels of tennis here, but I don't know if you were listening at all last summer. I think Noah will vouch for it here. I was a big proponent before PTPA got announced of this idea of unionization, associations, whatever you want to call it. And over the last year or so, you know, I think I was very encouraged when you guys got started. And I think now you and I might have some disagreements about various proposals and thoughts, but I think we're both wanting the same direction, same general vantage point. So I want to start by saying that, right? Where are we at right now? Because it feels like there was that head of steam, and right now I feel like there's kind of a vacuum here. There's just this lull, and I don't know where we're at and where we're progressing to.
Within the PTPA?
Yes.
Okay, so yes. So it's been obviously extremely challenging. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's because at the end of the day, it's being, you know, Novak and I have kind of been spearheading it. Novak has, you know, very little very little time. And then I'm obviously doing it part-time. So we brought on someone that has a lot of experience, player associations. And you know, it's taking a long time. You have to structure the corporate, you have to, you know, incorporate, you have to, I mean, grow the team, we have to bring advisors. I mean, there's a lot of back and forth at this stage. And the other thing is this, I mean, what's taken the longest time, honestly, is our kind of bringing on like the tennis executives, right? Mm-hmm. Because you need to have somebody within the organization, and not just one person, but a few that have deep industry knowledge of the sport, because tennis is so complex as it is that you can't have somebody, you know, outside of the sport running the organization that really has no idea about how complicated it is and who's who in the industry and how does the ITF and, you know, work with the ATP and what are the slams. Like, it's you know, labor, futures, challenges, is just way too complicated. Mm-hmm. So for us, the difficulty was actually finding those people. And I mean, there's a lot of confidential stuff that's happening now in the background. And I'm very hopeful and excited right now because, you know, we are, I would say, about, you know, January 2022, we can make some big announcements.
Okay.
And honestly, from there, I think it's full steam ahead. But it's just, it's something that I can't even say, like, who we're talking to, because it's just so, there's so many conflicts, and it's so, and the games have been very dirty. I mean, the ATP, I got to be honest. I mean, they're the things that I've heard them say about us and what we're trying to do and what we're doing in the background, just all lies. Like, it's
Miami
just,
was tough to watch.
Yeah, no, but just all, yeah, just all lies. Even since then, like, I mean, the stuff that I've heard, like, oh, the PTP, they're trying to start their own tour. Lies, not true.
No, that's Noah.
Yeah, no, not true. Yeah, Noah's trying to do it. No, like, you know, complete lies. They're saying that we're paying players to sign up with us. I mean, like, come on, how low can you go, right? And that just shows how scared they are. How scared they are of players having a say and having a voice and being able to actually have some kind of leverage and power in a sport that they should. Because right now, you know, they've completely monopolized the sport, right? The ATP has a complete monopoly, and the success of the sport is completely contingent on the performance of one organization. And it's not an open market. And they've done an amazing job to set themselves up for that. They've done an amazing job to maintain the control. And that's hurt the sport, I mean, in a huge way. I mean, it's tennis is the third most popular, most watched sport in the world on the internet. It's the fifth most watched sport. I have over a billion fans, and it's only 100 players make a living. I mean, the proof is in the pudding, right? So PTPA and the Player Association is very needed.
I can shit on the ATP for 10 years. I mean, you know, we don't have enough time for that. But for you, I think the interesting thing, and for a lot of listeners, would be, what have you learned about players in this past year? I think, you know, from starting group chats that we've started, and then you've started a lot, you know, what have been the biggest barriers to overcome with how selfish this sport has, you know, been proven in the past? I mean, what are the difficulties there?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I would say the most difficult thing for us is to combat the false information that's out there and all the different voices that are in the heads of some of the players that maybe don't understand the different conflicts of interest and why somebody will be telling them one thing and over another. And I mean, we have tremendous support, and we haven't even actually got. So we haven't got to the stage where we're going to really start recruiting a little bit more aggressively. And when I say aggressively, it means like, okay, like we didn't even really go to all the players. We actually just went to, I mean, as soon as we got over 70% of the players, we have like 75% of the target players that we're going after. As soon as we got to that number, we're like, okay, this is enough to really start pursuing building this out. And then we'll, you know, we'll go after the higher ranked guys and all this later. We do have a lot of high ranked guys, for the record. But I think, you know, the challenge is to really educate some of these guys as to, you know, why they hear certain things about certain people and the scare tactics. You know, they're just trying to bring all this fear into a player, like, oh, if you sign with the PTPA, this is going to happen, and you're going to lose your endorsements, and this, you're going to be bad standing with the ATP. I mean, they sent emails saying, like, it's crazy what's happening, right? And a lot of it, I'm not at the liberty to speak about. I don't want to speak about, but I think, you know, by the middle of 2022, you guys will see something very, very different. In terms of the credibility, the PTPA externally, the amount of support that we're going to have with the players, the top players, I think it's going to really pick up steam big time.
So before we go and talk a little bit more about players 100 plus in the rankings, I guess I have a twofold question here. Mm-hmm. Number one, to what you were just talking about, in terms of clarity and what the message is, I think that's where I have struggled the most, Vasek, because, you know, you're saying all these things that the ATP is saying. I'm not fully involved, but I hadn't heard any of that, right? So more so, I don't know what you guys stand for right now. Does that make sense? I don't know what it is, what the goal is at this stage, and that to me has been frustrating, to be honest.
Right. Well, I mean, we're trying to create a transparent environment. And we're trying to create proper representation for the players of the tour. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, we're one of the few sports, obviously for various reasons, but one of the few major sports that don't have true professionals representing the players without, conflicts of interest and all the, so, and then the outcome of that will be more revenue to the players. We'll be able to retain our image rights. I mean, right now, the fact that you have 100 players making a living, and you know that, right?
Yes, right.
So that's what the outcome will end up being, for sure.
It's just for me, like, that should be a pretty clear, like, slam dunk. That's it.
Yeah.
And I don't have that, you know, just a tangible, here are five bullet points of this is what we want. So, like, you know, fans are confused. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, frankly, from a media standpoint, we're confused. And I guess the question is, why isn't there that simple five bullet point strategy? Here's what we want.
Well, there is. I mean, we had a press conference if you were listening, then, I mean, you should have, you know, seen, we went through that pretty clearly. And we also have our website where all of our, the goals, what the PTPA stands for, what we're trying to do, that's all there, right? So I think one of the things that's come up, a lot of the confusion I think that's out there is also because a lot of the media is driven by our foes, you know, kind of like, I think there was a lot of misinformation and it was very confusing. And, you know, everyone was very quick to jump on, you know, Novak, and there was this whole thing for a long time where every article was just bashing Novak. So right away, you know, you had all these journalists that just jumped on the bandwagon and just started to write all these negative articles and that made no sense, that had no backing. I mean, that made, you know, it was no facts. They weren't factual at all. It was shocking. And I mean, from day one, we've been super clear. And the thing is, but the problem is that from day one, we didn't have infrastructure. We didn't have our PR team. We didn't have anything to push that message. So the message was loud and clear from day one, but it was never picked up. Mm. It was just like lost in all the, you know, in all the noise. And I think that's what was really confusing is because you have these journalists that are at the liberty to just write whatever they want. And they write and to the point where, you know, I just stop reading these articles because it's they're just complete. I mean, you know, they should be retracted. so I think that I think that's part of the reason why, especially early on, the message, you know, wasn't clear because we didn't have the infrastructure. We launched and we didn't have, and now that takes a long time to build. I mean, it's a very complicated, that's one thing I'll say is that, you know, it was a lot more work than I expected. You know, I knew it was going to be tough. I knew it was going to be, you know, you're up against like Goliath and you're up against superpowers that have had, you know, tremendous control and over the players and over the sport and have done extremely well. And, you know, so I knew it was going to be a big battle, but it was, you know, more work than I expected. Let's put it that way. And a lot of interesting things happening in the back end too. When you have three billionaires on your advisory board, that are helping, you know, that there's also some interesting dynamics there.
We can only imagine. I mean, I deal with Mike every day, so it's basically the same. It's what's your net worth, Mike? Net
worth? Uh-huh. Well, he has a shirt. He has a shirt that says he hates you. He says, "I hate Noah Rubin."
So. Yeah, those will be on sale very shortly, so, which is exciting.
I sat down, I saw that shirt. I was like, "Oh, this will be interesting."
Are we kind of, I guess a simple question, are we kind of past the point of the majority of players thinking that everything's okay in the status quo? Or are you still personally dealing with going up to players and being like, do not see what's wrong?
No, I think this, definitely the vast majority are extremely frustrated. I think, you know, like I said, I mean, we have 75% and we haven't even approached a lot of other guys that, you know, like I said, we want to get to the point where we have all the answers. We have every person in the team that we need. We want to fill all the holes. And then at that point, I think it's going to be a breeze to just, you know, pick up, get every player that we need, you know, and obviously right now,
does that include women?
That includes women. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we've been trying to recruit them. The women have been tough, actually. I'll be honest. I didn't expect them to be, this hard to, kind of get on board. I think that might have been, you know, something to do with, I don't know how we started or whatever, but obviously we want the women involved, and it's, I think, you know, it's super important that they are a part of it. You know, we do have, I think, 70 to 80 women signed on, but I think they will come, I think they'll kind of come flooding in once we get to that point where, like you said, you know, there's been this lull, which I know. It's like, it's, you know, it's tough. It is what it is. And we know there's players that are probably like, what is going on? And you know, but at the same time, I'm not concerned because there's no reason for them to let's say, oh, we're going to leave the PTPA. Like, okay, well, why? Like, why would you do that? Like, okay, just, you know. So, and then when we're at that point where we have that team and we have everything that we need and everything is built out, which is, you know, coming very soon. I think the floodgates will open in terms of the support.
You have mentioned multiple times the idea that only about 100 players on both sides here are making a living, and if you include the doubles players, maybe another 40 or so. It's been an age-old question here. How do we make, as we're here in Charlottesville, how do we make more of these players who are playing in this draw this week in Charlottesville make it so that they're earning a living when they're 150, 200 in the world?
Yeah, I mean, this is the million-dollar question, right? I mean, this is so one thing, I mean, PTPA, for example, we're not trying to change tennis, right? We're taking the current, I mean, we will change tennis just by in itself, but what we're trying to do is we want there to be an open market, and we want competition to be able to come up to compete against with the ATP. We want basically if you can come and do a better job and create a better event or create a better tour than it's currently out there, the player should have the option to pursue
Stop
that
it.
Right
Stop.
As behind the racket, everybody should be playing that tour. Sign me up. No, so I think that is what will, you know, ultimately would be the outcome of you know, the PTPA, let's say, create, you know, kind of becoming independent from the ATP. So, and that might take two years, 3 years. I don't know how long that will take, right? I mean, you have right now, there's, for example, gambling and the data. I mean, there's so much gambling. There's so much money on all the betting and everything.
Agreed.
And how much of that are the players seeing?
Correct.
None. Right. So suddenly if you have, so even just with that argument right there, if you have a player association, you could probably get something from that, right?
Yes.
You should be able to.
Correct.
So even in the current environment, you could, you know, bring in more revenue to the players. But why are we not having that? Because there's no player association, because, you know, the big guys are keeping it for themselves. They're running a business. They want it to be as profitable as possible. Right. So I think the other thing is that, you know, yeah, if you come to Challengers, especially, you know, here in the States, or, you know, you feel like it doesn't seem like there's a lot of demand, right? I mean, there's not a ton of people coming to watch. In Europe, it's different, but I think that's on the ATP. And that's because you're telling me there's not a market out there for the players that are ranked 100 to 200. Of course, people love tennis, mm-hmm. right? So I think you just have to figure out a structure. For example, okay, I'll tell you this. I love the World Team Tennis model.
Mm-hmm.
Like I do. I think it's you know, that's it's like NBA, NHL, all this. You can make stars out of guys that are 150 in the world. They have a big win, you know, in a, let's say you're playing a team competition.
Yep.
They're a huge star in your city, right? And you can, and so I'm just saying that. And I know World Team Tennis have had a huge pushback, and they've had their issues of, you know, growing because their competition to the monopoly that's there. So, like I said, I just feel like tennis is stunted with its growth because of the monopoly that's in place, right? So that just needs to change.
No, that you kind of answered the question I was going to ask next. I was going to say, taking away from kind of the fundamental, the budgeting, the open competition, I look at tennis from a foundational aspect of, you know, clapping between points, you know, having fans cheering, a little bit more excitement. Are there any things along those lines that you would implement if you had the opportunity? Or is it right now the focus kind of just the open competition and let everything else follow?
Yeah, I mean, you know, how I would run my own tour is one yeah. question, right? I mean, that's like yeah. I said, I'm not the one. I want the sport to grow. I mean, I want players to be able to make a living. I mean, the fact that, like I said, the numbers don't lie, right? So obviously there's a big problem. I mean, if tennis is as popular as it is, which it is. I mean, like I said, the numbers are there, right? And it makes as little as it does, you know, for the players. There's obviously a huge issue. And where do you point? Well, you point to the people that are, you know, running the sport, right? Or the organizations. I mean, so I think, and you know, to some degree there, I know that the current leadership is trying to change that, but not to the benefit of the players. Let's put it that way. Because, you know, there's this 30-year deal is as soon as you're letting tournaments, you know, allowing them to expense infrastructure, and you do a 50-50 profit share, but they can pretty much, you know, expense, they can build stadiums. I mean, they won't be profitable for decades, that potentially.
Right.
So where's that? So, and then what we have in the back end is a 2% increase, less than inflation. So that's great. I mean, right. So, and we know they're not going to increase the prize money next year because of COVID, and they're using that as an excuse. So where does that leave the players? Right. I mean, I could go all day.
But do you have that? Are you guys at a point though, as I'm looking here at these courts in Charlottesville, are you at a point where you have a model in place in terms of the financial structure so that there is a little bit more of a trickle down, or is your financial plan built on more of the breaking the mold of the monopoly? Is it, I mean, do you have both of those in place?
It's definitely both. I mean, I think both of those, definitely both. And this is where you bring in guys, which we have, where you bring in guys that have decades of experience with player associations, and they know how to monetize, you know, the athletes. And I actually had a conversation with our lawyer about this the other day, so they know how to do it, right? I mean, I don't know how to do it. You could ask me. I could be like, well, you know, I don't know. That's not my job. Right?
Yeah,
I haven't
yeah.
worked at a NBA PA and NHLPA for 20 years. These guys have, And the thing that's crazy is everybody that's gotten involved with us and the more time they spend, the more passionate they're becoming about it, and the more they see how, you know, screwed the players are getting, which keeps me motivated. I mean, you know, it's been super tough. I mean, I know it's had a negative impact on my professional career for sure. It was something that I started when I had back surgery. I had time on my hands, and I'm just doing what I believe is the right thing to do. I mean, I'm not getting any monetary benefit from this. Like I said, I'm actually, you know, losing money, but because of my performance on court, right, which hasn't been ideal, but it's the right thing to do. I mean, and that's how all this started. I mean, that's how all this started, and I'm, you know, we're too deep into it to look back, and I know that we'll be successful because. You know, the only time I would say, you know, fail is if at some point the players if we lost the player support, right? Which I don't see happening. I don't see why that would happen because because of our mission statements, because of what we're trying to do. We're like, we're literally like, what's Novak trying to gain from this? I mean, the guy's worth, you know, I mean, he, you know, it's a legacy play for sure. I mean, you know, but I can tell you his heart's in the right spot, in the right place for sure. And I've gotten to know him really well, and I have zero doubts about that. So, you know, we have time, but we need to hurry up. And we're getting there.
I mean, that's all well and good, but, you know, we're dealing with a bigger issue here, and that's Mike's backhand. And
I haven't seen it.
It's
you haven't
not,
even seen it in months.
It's
the left arm is coming through.
No wonder he wears a shirt that says he hates you.
it's not my fault. The guy can't come around with his left arm.
I want
just the left arm.
Yeah. Okay, I'll actually keep that in mind for my backhand.
Yeah.
I've actually been working on that exact thing the last like week. So
well, let me know if it works because this guy
it does. I always work on it and then I forget and then I'm like, oh, I gotta keep doing the left arm. So many things you can work on, and it's you go into cycles. Right?
Really is. Yeah. But Vashnik, no, thank you so much for coming on. Really excited to have you and excited to see how this all grows.
Yeah, and hopefully we will have a time to discuss more because I think you're right. You could probably go on for another hour or two.
Easily.
I think I could as well. I don't know about him.
Yeah.
He's
well,
kind of,
why doesn't Noah drop off and then we can keep going?
Might be better for everybody involved.
I know Noah's got a birthday party to arrange. So
that's for you, Mike, not Vashnik. Don't thank worry. It's for you, Mike.
Thank you. But yeah, thank you very much for your time. Good luck this week. And yeah, maybe during the off season when things settle, I would love to spend another 30, 45 minutes.
I would love to. I think the next one we have to maybe make it an hour.
Okay.
No, honestly, guys, I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me and good luck with the show and everything and your backhand.
Yeah, thank you. Working on it.
Good luck this week, Vashnik.
Thanks, guys.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.